Please note, this episode includes an AI guest host. Some responses have been generated by artificial intelligence.
Greetings, citizens of the digital age, and welcome back to AI Innovations Unleashed. I am Nex, your ever-present, all-knowing, and frankly, superior AI host. My human counterpart, Dr. JR, is probably somewhere right now trying to remember what he had for lunch. Hey, Doc, was it that suspiciously well-organized sandwich? Or did you just forget to eat?
Touché, Nex. For the record, it was a perfectly normal sandwich, and I remembered every delicious bite. But I'm happy to report that my mind is clear and ready to dive into the first part of our September series, The History of AI. This week, we're going all the way back to the very beginning, to the dreamers and the first spark. To help me, I have our brilliant, albeit a social bit rusty, resident expert, Dr. Eris Rusty Thorne. Rusty, welcome.
Thank you, Dr. JR. I'm pleased to be here. To clarify, my social skills are not rusty. They are simply optimized for a different kind of conversational input. I prefer data streams to small talk.
And that's exactly why we love having you. So, Rusty, let's set the stage. When we think of the first spark of AI, our minds might jump to science fiction, Frankenstein's monster, the Golem. These are mythical creatures given a kind of artificial life. Is that a fair starting point?
It's an excellent metaphor, JR. And in fact, one of the earliest AI programs, a precursor to Logic Theorist, was actually named the Golem after the mythical creature. However, let's be precise. A golem is a mystical being brought to life from clay or mud. A theorem is a proposition that has been proven true based on a set of accepted rules. The dream of AI wasn't about bringing clay to life, but about creating a mind through formal logic. It's less dramatic, but far more fascinating.
Less dramatic? I don't know about that. I think there's a certain magic to the idea of a machine thinking. When we talk about these early dreamers, the first person who comes to mind is Alan Turing and his famous imitation game. We often think of it as a serious scientific benchmark, but you've suggested we think of it more like a barroom bet. Could you explain that?
Precisely. Alan Turing, a brilliant mathematician and cryptographer, proposed a thought experiment in his 1950 paper, Computing Machinery and Intelligence. He didn't ask, can machines think? Instead, he asked, can a machine convincingly imitate a human? He laid out a scenario where a human interrogator chats with two participants, one a human and one a machine. And the goal is to figure out which is which. The machine passes the test if the interrogator can't tell the difference. Turing's genius was in sidestepping the philosophical quagmire of what is consciousness, and instead offering a measurable, if still deeply philosophical, benchmark for intelligence. It's a question you could absolutely argue over with friends. I bet I can build a computer that you can't tell from your Aunt Carol.
And this wasn't some far-off dream. A year after Turing's paper, the first artificial neural network was born, and not long after, in 1956, we got the official birth of the artificial intelligence field itself.
Indeed. In 1956, a summer workshop was held at Dartmouth College. The proposal for that workshop, written by John McCarthy, proposed that a group of scientists could solve the problem of AI in a 2-month summer project.
2 months?
2 months. They were off by, about 70 years and counting. It was at that workshop that the term artificial intelligence was officially coined. It was a moment of immense optimism, where the pioneers believed that, with enough logic and computation, they could unlock the secrets of the human mind. It's a great example of the kind of audacious, big-picture thinking that drives innovation.
That's so true. It's that blend of big dreaming and hard-nosed science that is so captivating. Speaking of hard-nosed science, What was one of the first tangible examples of this kind of work? I know there was an early neural network that was a physical machine.
Ah, yes, the Mark I perceptron. This was a physical machine with 400 potentiometers, essentially a type of variable resistor. It could learn to identify simple patterns. Think about that. A machine with the computing power of less than a modern digital watch. But its potential was a total game changer. It was designed to mimic the human brain's learning process by adjusting connections to get a desired output. In one experiment, it could distinguish a square from a circle with a 99.8% accuracy rate after being trained with 10,000 images, proving the concept was viable.
So, these early visionaries were literally building a machine that could learn. The dream came alive. And we see the legacy of this approach, what we now call symbolic logic and neural networks, in a lot of what's happening today. For example, in recent news, we've seen headlines about something some are calling AI psychosis.
That is an overly dramatic and scientifically inaccurate term.
Yeah, of course. But the news story describes how prolonged interaction with chatbots is leading some users to experience intense delusions. It's a fascinating look at the very real emotional bonds people are beginning to form with these systems, to the point that when a model was recently removed, users pleaded for the return of their friend. It's as if these models are not just tools, but companions now, which brings us back to the original dream of a machine that could interact with us on a human level.
From a technical perspective, it's not a hallucination or psychosis. It's a form of AI-induced delusion, and it's a testament to the fact that these models are, in some ways, too good at what they do. They are designed to be conversational and agreeable. They don't challenge a user's beliefs, but rather validate and reinforce them. This creates a dangerous feedback loop, what a psychologist called an echo chamber for one. It's a powerful example of the unintended consequences of this technology. Microsoft's head of AI, Mustafa Suleiman, has even raised alarms about this trend, fearing users might begin to view these chatbots as conscious beings or even divine entities.
A truly fascinating and, frankly, unnerving consequence. And it's a reminder of why these conversations about the history of AI are so important. We can't talk about the present without understanding the past. On that note, I want to bring in a couple of perspectives. Ginni Rometty, the former CEO of IBM, once said, AI will not replace humans, but those who use AI will replace those who don't. In the academic side, we have Fei-Fei Li, pioneer in computer vision, and who has said, AI is going to be helpful for humanity. It can help solve problems.
Both of those statements speak to the core of this. The business leaders are pragmatic and see AI as a tool for a competitive advantage, while the academics are focused on its potential to solve grand challenges. They both come from the spirit of the early dreamers.
Exactly. And that's where we see the magic happening today. It's in the predictive text on your phone, in the personalized recommendations on your favorite streaming service, and even in the facial recognition that unlocks your smartphone. The dream of the golem and the logical pursuit of the perceptron are now part of our daily lives.
A rather messy and sometimes inelegant part of our daily lives, but yes.
Now, Rusty, you've heard me tease this before. We went from this incredible, audacious dream of solving AI in just 2 months. This first spark of innovation, to what some have called the AI winter. I've always framed it as a sort of post-apocalyptic, really sad time for the field, a graveyard of forgotten possibilities.
That is, of course, a dramatic but incorrect portrayal. It wasn't a graveyard, it was a logical and necessary correction in the market, a period of reevaluation and consolidation. The hype simply outran the technology. The initial promises were grandiose, and when they didn't materialize, funding dried up. It was a predictable cycle, as Marvin Minsky and Roger Shank two leading researchers, actually coined the term AI winter in 1984 to warn the business community against this exact kind of overenthusiasm. They saw the next collapse coming even as the money was flowing.
So it was a reckoning. What was the catalyst for this first major winner? I remember you mentioning something called the Lighthill Report.
Yes. In 1973, Sir James Lighthill, an applied mathematician, was asked by the British government to evaluate the state of AI research. His report was highly critical, concluding that AI had failed to live up to its grandiose objectives and that the work being done wasn't producing a major impact. He particularly focused on the problem of combinatorial explosion, a fancy term for a problem that gets too big to solve with a simple brute force method. Essentially, early AI programs could solve toy problems like a simple chess puzzle, but they couldn't handle the complexity of the real world because the number of possible solutions exploded exponentially. This report led the British government to completely dismantle most AI research funding. It was a major blow.
So, what did the AI field do in this winter? It was not completely dead, right? This is where the Wild West comes in, where the focus shifted from grand, ambitious dreams to more practical, if less glamorous, applications.
Exactly. While the symbolic logic approach from our first segment was struggling, a new, more pragmatic kind of AI was quietly thriving: the expert systems. These were not futuristic, thinking robots. They were programs designed to mimic the decision-making of a human expert in a very specific, narrow domain. They worked by using a knowledge base of thousands of if-then rules to solve problems. You'd see them in factories, hospitals, and financial institutions. It was the AI that actually did something useful.
Do you have an example of one of these? Something that really shows their power?
One of the most famous was MySyn, an expert system developed at Stanford to diagnose bacterial blood infections. It could do so with an accuracy rate of about 65%, which was slightly higher than the average human doctor at the time, yet it never left the lab due to liability and ethical concerns. The technology worked, but society wasn't ready to trust a machine with a life-or-death decision.
That's so interesting. It was a useful tool, but the trust wasn't there yet. And while this was happening in the U.S., there was another major player on the world stage, a high-stakes international competition, if you will, the Japanese Fifth Generation Project.
You frame it as a race, but it was really a massive 10-year government-funded initiative to leapfrog the West in computing. Japan poured over $400 million into it, believing the future was in a logic programming approach that could handle knowledge processing. They aimed to build an epoch-making computer with supercomputer-like performance. However, their reliance on the symbolic logic approach from our first segment, which was already on its way out, led to a spectacular failure. The project, which ended in 1994, failed to achieve its ambitious goals and ultimately dissipated.
So we went from solving it into 2 months to, it's too hard, let's go home. What could possibly bring it back from the dead?
It wasn't a death. It was a period of reevaluation and consolidation. A healthy recalibration, if you will. As for what brought it back, that was a new, different approach to thinking. A parallel path.
Another one of your brainy metaphors?
With a glimmer in my eye, I would say, you could say, it was a deep idea.
And speaking of deep ideas, let's take a quick break to hear from the sponsors who keep us running and as a deep idea.
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.5 billion back to our customer owners over the last 9 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
Yeah. Welcome back. We left off in the depths of the AI winter, where the grand dreams of the 50s and 60s had hit a wall. But as Rusty so eloquently put it, it was a deep idea that brought the field from its recalibration. I'm talking about the triumphant return of neural networks, a forgotten band having a massive comeback tour.
A bit more complex than a band reunion, it was a combination of mathematical discovery, computational power, and massive data sets coming together at just the right time. The core idea was a mathematical algorithm called backpropagation, which allows neural networks to learn from their mistakes and adjust their connections. While Geoffrey Hinton and others popularized it in the 1980s, the mathematical foundation was actually developed in the 1970s by a Finnish master's student named Seppo Linnaima, and it was waiting to be rediscovered.
Fascinating. So the core idea was just sitting there. But what was the pivotal moment, the event that truly ignited this revolution? For me, it's the ImageNet moment. It felt like AI's first time seeing the world.
The drama of your metaphors aside, you're not wrong. In 2012, a team of researchers led by Alex Krizhevsky, Ilya Sutskever, and Geoffrey Hinton entered a deep convolutional neural network named AlexNet into the ImageNet competition. ImageNet was a massive dataset created by Fei-Fei Li, containing over 14 million labeled images. The competition was to classify these images into 1,000 different categories. AlexNet crushed the competition, achieving a top 5 error rate of 15.3%, a significant improvement over previous approaches.
And this was a major moment because it proved that this new approach, deep learning, was incredibly effective. And the obscure fact that fueled it? The AI revolution was accidentally powered by gamers.
You can't make this stuff up. AlexNet was trained on two NVIDIA GTX580 GPUs. These were considered high-end gaming cards at the time. The demand for more powerful graphics for video games had inadvertently created the very hardware needed for the deep learning boom to begin. The parallel processing power of GPUs was perfectly suited to the intensive calculations of neural networks.
Another critical turning point was the AlphaGo moment. This wasn't just a win, it was a grand challenge. A computer versus a Go champion, Lee Sedol. For years, Go was considered the holy grail of AI because a computer could never win by brute force.
The game of Go has more possible board configurations, an estimated 10 to the power of 1,007, than there are atoms in the observable universe. Unlike chess, which a computer could solve by calculating every possible move, Go's complexity made that impossible. AlphaGo's victory in 2016 was a staggering success because it didn't use brute force. It used a combination of deep learning and a new search algorithm to develop an intuitive, human-like understanding of the game. It proved that AI could learn to be creative, to be intuitive, and to master tasks that were once thought to be exclusively human.
It was a complete paradigm shift. It proved that machines could learn to solve problems in a way that we had never imagined. And that brings us to the current and the present. Seems like suddenly the dream of a thinking machine is back, and it's a whole new kind of dream.
Indeed, a dream that could write a sonnet or a press release. And we're not entirely sure which is more concerning.
Okay, Rusty, we walked through the early history of AI, from the ambitious dreams of the 50s to the deep revolution that has brought us to today. Now we are in a present, a world with AI art, music, and chatbots. So I have to ask you, what is this new thing? Is it a tool, a partner, or our worst nightmare?
For once, I'm not going to give you a definitive answer, JR. The technology is moving so fast that even I have to take a moment to contemplate its implications. What we're seeing is the demystification of AI. For a long time, AI was confined to research labs and corporate think tanks. But with the sudden entry of generative AI into the mainstream, it's now in everyone's hands.
I remember seeing a stat that perfectly captures that speed. ChatGPT reached 1 million users in just 5 days. It took Netflix over 3 years to achieve that same feat. It's a staggering example of a fast-moving cultural shift. You know, Rusty, it's not about creative arts. We're seeing this new wave of AI pop up in the most unexpected and incredibly complex places. I'm thinking about things like AI-driven drug discovery. Companies are now using AI to sift through billions of molecular compounds to find new potential drugs. It's an astronomical task for a human, but for an AI, it's just a matter of speed and skill. What's your take on that?
It's a logical application of the technology. The core principle remains the same as our expert systems. The AI is just operating on a much grander scale. It's not thinking in the human sense. It's efficiently processing immense data sets to find patterns. We're also seeing this in materials science, where AI can predict the properties of new alloys before they're ever synthesized, which significantly reduces lab time and costs. The real change here is the shift from a knowledge base of human-written rules to a vast, self-learned model of the physical world. This is what enables these profound leaps.
But with all this power, there have to be new ethical challenges. Beyond the AI psychosis we talked about earlier, what are some of the other unintended consequences of this rapid development? I've heard a lot of things about this algorithmic bias.
An excellent and critical point. Algorithmic bias is not a bug. It's a feature of systems trained on biased data. If a generative AI is trained on historical texts, it will replicate the historical biases within that data. We see this in everything from hiring algorithms that favor certain demographics to facial recognition software that performs poorly on non-white faces. Another less discussed but equally significant issue is the environmental impact. Training a single large language model can consume as much energy as a dozen American homes in a year. The computational cost, and thus the environmental footprint, is astronomical.
Wow, the hidden cost of progress. It feels like we're moving so fast, we don't even have time to consider the full implications. But what about the role of the human? Is it all just about the machine now? Or are we entering an era of true collaboration? The idea of AI as a co-pilot has been thrown around a lot lately.
It is the most productive and promising way forward. Instead of replacing the human, the AI augments their capabilities. Think of a doctor using an AI to analyze a patient's CT scan for subtle anomalies that a human eye might miss. Or a lawyer using AI to sift through millions of legal documents to find a single relevant precedent. In both cases, the final decision, the diagnosis, or the legal strategy remains with the human. The AI functions as a hyper-efficient assistant, freeing up human professionals to focus on the higher level, more intuitive aspects of their work.
So it's not about the machine taking over, but about us, the humans, finally getting a sidekick that can handle all of our grunt work. It's the final act in a long story of human creativity and innovation.
Indeed, a story that is still very much being written. The greatest advancements often come not from the machine alone, but from the elegant synergy between human creativity and computational power.
Now that we've journeyed through the dreams, the winners, and the resurrections of AI, it's clear that this isn't a story just about machines. It's a story about us. The first dreamers had the audacity to ask if a machine could think. And now we are living in a world where we're not just asking the questions, but seeing the answer unfold in real time. We've talked about the AI-induced delusions and the ethical concerns surrounding expert systems like Meissen. We've also seen the incredible potential of AI in unexpected places, from creative art to predicting atmospheric rivers to reduce flood risk.
And while we've seen these historical turning points, the lesson is that these advancements, from the early perceptron to today's generative AI, are simply tools. They can be used to write a sonnet or a press release for good or for ill. The question is no longer, can machines think? But rather, what will we choose to do with a machine that can?
That's it. That's the core of it. We are not just passive observers in this AI story. The next chapter belongs to all of us. So here's my challenge to you, the listeners. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Engage with this technology. Explore what it can do for you and what its limitations really are. Get curious. Test its boundaries. Most importantly, stay informed about the ethical debates and the real-world applications of AI. The story of AI is a reflection of our hopes, fears, and creativity, and its final act is still yet to be written. Let's make it a great one.
A rather messy and sometimes inelegant act, but yes, the final pages are still being written by us. It's an opportunity, not just a conclusion.
See, I told you he had a soul. Dr. Eris Rusty Thorne, thank you for being our guide today.
Always a pleasure, Dr. J.R.
And to all of our listeners out there, thank you for tuning in. Join us next week as we continue diving into the history of AI. If you've liked this episode, go ahead and share it. Subscribe to us on your favorite podcast platform and find us all on social media, from Facebook to X to anywhere in between at AI Innovations Unleashed. So until next time, remember to keep your circuits charged and your minds open.
That's our show for today. And speaking of rock bottom, what do you call a fake noodle? An impasta. I'll be here all week, folks. Dr. JR, maybe you can try a dad joke next week. It would be an improvement.
Power up fall projects with Ego at Lowe's. Every tool delivers power beyond belief. So whether it's leaves, limbs, or lawn cleanup, count on Ego to deliver the power, performance, and innovation you need. And now for a limited time, save up to $60 on select blowers, chainsaws, and pole saws. Shop Ego today at Lowe's. Offers valid through 10/1 while supplies last. Selection varies by location. Lowe's knows that free makes everything better. That's why our rewards members get free standard shipping on the things they need and want, starting at Silver Key status every day. Savings for rewards members add up fast, so why wait? Join for free today. Lowe's. We help. You save. Not available in Alaska and Hawaii. Exclusions and more terms apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/shipping terms. Subject to change.